Thank you for that introduction. And as he said, today I'm talking about no-till and soil health. So we've heard a lot about the benefits of no-till and cover crops at this conference this year. We have this new cover crop community, which is great. But some of the big benefits are scavenging nutrients, building up soil structure, and improving biological community. So we know we have all of these benefits, but we really need some work in the Midwest. So we kind of have a challenge of integrating these cover crops into these very large corn and soybean systems that we have here in the Midwest. And then we also have the struggle of the climate stresses, shorter growing degree days. It's kind of a challenge to get them established in the fall and then to have good growth in the spring as well. We also need work on quantifying the benefits and the risks of the cover crops and then educating people on how to manage them. So there was this large project started in Indiana. It's a three-year study. It's in its second year now. It was with Conservation Cropping Systems Initiative, and then there's all these partners helping out, which is very helpful. But we have 17 sites across Indiana where we have no-till and cover crop trials. Three of them are Purdue Research Farms, 12 are farmer cooperators, and then we have two others. One of them is a county farm, and then another one is with Vincennes University. But the objectives of this project, the main one was to measure and demonstrate the effects of cover crops on the soil physical, chemical, biological properties, and then the relationship with nutrient cycling, soil water availability, and then crop growth. We also wanted to integrate no-till and cover crops into productive, sustainable systems, and then educate those crop advisors and farmers on how to manage them and the impacts on soil health. So here's a map of Indiana for you. I'm going to show you where the sites are. So when the project initially began, we broke up Indiana into four separate quadrants. So there was northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest. We started out with our three Purdue research sites. NEPAC is the Northeast Purdue Ag Center, CPAC is the Southeast Purdue Ag Center, and then DTC is actually called the Diagnostic Training Center, and it's just a little bit north of Purdue's campus. And then we added four of our farmers. So we actually do a little bit more on these four farmers, and my point with the quadrants was that we wanted three farmer cooperators in each quadrant of Indiana. Here's our four main ones, and these are actually the seven sites that I'll be talking about today, and they're on my thesis. And then here are the other sites. So here are all the parameters that we're looking at on the project. We have many different soil and plant parameters. These are the ones I'll be talking about today. So we do aggregate stability, bulk density, water retention at negative 10 kilopascals, cover crop biomass in the spring and fall, and then our cash crop yield. So here's the treatments for our Purdue research sites. In 2013, we had NEPAC and CPAC treatments, and then in 2014, we added the DTC. But at each location, we actually have corn and soybean rotations, but we have corn and soybeans growing in the same year, and then three treatments within those. So our three treatments in both of those consist of a no-cover crop or a no-cover control. These are in no-till, by the way, all of them. And then we wanted two cover crop treatments that were a little bit easier. These are ones that we recommend to kind of farmers that are doing it for the first time. Before corn, we recommend oat and oilseed radish. They grow really rapidly in the fall. They do really well in the fall. And then they winter kill, so the farmer doesn't have to do any management in the spring. So that's kind of the easy one before corn. Our easy one before soybean is cereal rye. That's a cover crop that has been used a lot in the Midwest. We know pretty much how to manage it, and it's not too hard for farmers to be able to manage either. And then we had a more complex cover crop mix before corn and soybeans. So our four mixes in 2013 were oat, oilseed radish, cereal rye, and crimson clover. The reason for these, oat and oilseed radish, the same as before. They grow really rapidly in the fall. They scavenge some nutrients and build up our soil for us, and then they winter kill. And then we have cereal rye and crimson clover in the spring that pop back up and scavenge some more nutrients and really give a boost to our cash crop. And then in 2014, we actually took out the crimson clover before we realized that the soybeans, the legume, they don't really need that extra boost of nitrogen in the spring. Here's the treatments for the farmer sites. What we told our farmers is that we wanted them to kind of have one of their treatments be their current system, whether that be a conventional till, no-till, cover crop. So whatever they were currently using, most of them it was a no-till, no-cover. And then we told them that we wanted to do kind of a new treatment, and that would consist of a no-till and a cover crop. The one that is kind of different is at the DeSutter site. We had the chance to have a conventional till neighbor as a comparison, and so he actually has the three different treatments where he's got a no-till, no-cover, no-till cereal rye, and then a conventional till, no-cover. So here's some cover crop seeding dates, just for your information. We only actually had three sites that had cover crops planted in 2012, so we had treatments for 2013 for those three sites. The other ones were planted in fall of 2013, and then we had treatments for 2014, and then all of them were drilled. As you can see here, in fall of 2013, we had a little bit later planting dates. We would actually like those to be a little bit sooner, but here we are again in fall of 2014, and we can't get anything harvested, but that's okay. We'll get them in soon. So I'll start off with some cover crop biomass. At the Purdue sites, we actually sample three times a year, but we sample once in the fall right before winter kill, and then twice in the spring. The reason why we sample twice in the spring is that we sample one time before the corn treatments are going to be killed. We like to kill the cover crops at least 2 weeks before corn planting because of potential allelopathy and nutrient tie-up with that cereal rye for the corn. But then we let the cover crops grow before soybeans, just have a little bit more growth and get the cover crops to be a little bit bigger before soybean. We don't have that potential allelopathy and nutrient tie-up with those. And then the farmer sites just sample once in the fall and once in the spring. So here's some fall biomass data for you. You'll note that the y-axis is in kilograms per hectare of biomass. And on this graph, there are two locations. It's CPAC and DTC, so two of our Purdue research sites. And I'll also tell you now that we did sample weeds if there were any in the no cover. But here, there weren't very many weeds in the no cover, so that's why there's not much there. But this is to kind of show you the rapid growth of the oat and oilseed radish in the fall. Here's some spring 2014 data from NEPAC and CPAC. Again, there is not much growth in the no-cover plots. There's also not much growth in the oat and oilseed radish. This is because they winter kill in the fall. The only thing that is actually growing on this graph is the cereal rye and crimson clover because everything else was winter killed. So most of the biomass in the first sampling, because this has both of our samplings on here, was less than 1,000 kilograms per hectare. And then when we get to our second sampling, we have a lot more growth there. Here's an example of one of our adjacent studies. This is actually the same plot, first sampling and second sampling. The first sampling, we had about 800 kilograms per hectare. And then when we waited 2 to 3 weeks, you can see that we got approximately 2,000 more kilograms per hectare. So it really helps to let those cover crops grow before the beans. And then here's another example of a spring 2014. This is our DTC site. We had a lot more growth here, but the same thing. Not much weed growth, and then a higher biomass in the second sampling. So I'll move on to aggregate stability. We used a wet ag stability method with soil that was 0 to 5 centimeters. So we didn't find very many differences with the cover crop treatment, but what we did find was a CPAC in 2013. You can see that the cereal rye treatment was significantly higher than both of the no covers and the oat and oilseed radish treatment before corn. And then in NEPAC in 2014, we actually saw the opposite. So the no cover before beans was different than the no cover before corn and the 4-mix before corn. We don't really know why this happened, but sometimes you get what you are not thinking in the beginning. And then here we saw a difference with tillage with aggregate stability. Remember, this is the site where we actually have the conventional tilled neighbor to work with. And so both of the no-till treatments were different than the conventional till. And now I'll move on to bulk density and water retention. We collected intact soil cores. In 2013, we collected them from two depths, 0 to 10, 10 to 20 centimeters. 2014, we collected them from the top depth, and then next year, both depths will be collected again. For water retention, we equilibrated the cores on a sand table at negative 10 kilopascals and then found our water retention. So here is some data from NEPAC and CPAC 2014. For bulk density, we did not find any differences with cover crop treatment, but we did in tillage. So this is the site that we have the conventional till farmer. And as you can see in 2014, the no-till was significantly different from the conventional. In water retention, we saw the same thing. We didn't really find many differences, but what we did find was at one of our farmer sites that had cover crops for the 2 years, we did find that annual ryegrass was different than the oilseed radish and cereal rye, and then that the cereal rye was different than the no cover and the annual ryegrass. Moving on to yield, I got all of the data for 2013 yield, and there were no differences at any of the sites, but this is kind of what we saw. So the yield is in megagrams per hectare, and this is two of our Purdue research sites. Again, we had corn and soy. We have both corn and soybean treatments there, so there's the data for that. So in summary, there were very few differences in 2 years. We kind of expect that. We really need a longer amount of time to see a difference, and this study is going to go on for another year, and possibly it could possibly be a five-year study. So we need more research to quantify the long-term effects on our soils. I would like to thank the funding sources and everyone who has helped me on the project, and thank you guys for coming today.
Questions. I have a question. You mentioned about the allelopathic effects, like a head of corn versus mm-hmm. soybeans. So y'all let it go longer. So you don't. Basically, you're saying the soybean is tolerant. It's not affected by any kind of allelopathic. Or could you explain that a little further?
Yeah, we believe that the cereal rye doesn't have an allelopathic effect on soybean.
Okay.
But we think it does before corn. Yeah. We chemically kill them. Yeah.
I've got a follow-up to the question about the allelopathy.
Okay.
Is it possible that rather than seeing allelopathy, that you're seeing an effect of necrotrophic plant pathogens that are taking advantage of these dying plants?
That could be possible. That's not something that I've looked at or something that I'm very familiar with. But yeah, it could be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, we have a break now, just a 15-minute break. There was a paper that was canceled, so I don't want to, I'm sorry for the last speaker, but I want to stay on time just because of the other talks that are going on. So, we have a discussion schedule, but we certainly can have a pre-discussion or anything you guys I want to talk about. I guess I kind of have a question for the crowd. People that you work with mixtures, it's more a curiosity for me. Like, how are people actually determining their mixtures? Is it kind of a rule of thumb what they're going for, and then they set their seeding rates accordingly? Or, I've heard some rules of thumb, like let's say you got five species and you got five different seeding rates there, so you just divide each one of those by five and do it that way. And the other question I have related to the mixtures is, I hadn't heard anybody say actually how they plant the mixtures, because to me, I think about all these different seed sizes, and seems like they'd be all segregated out in there, and you wouldn't get an even distribution. So I was wondering if anybody might want to comment about that briefly. Okay.
Minnesota, two species and experience about the seeding. We seeded cemetery down here to go. And you do have it segregated out. If you get out every so often, you mix up the boxes.
Uh-huh.
That's simple.
Okay. Okay.
We have three, you know, two other or whatever, and then you break out so that they're all equal 100. That's how we do our feeding rate for each 1,000 quota.
Okay.
Now, what we do with ours is what you were saying, you look at the recommendations depending on who's selling the seed or where they come from, there's some tremendous variations. We'll put that down the middle, and then we'll take that number and say it's veg. The one thing that I see with the cover crops time and time again that maybe is one of our biggest challenges in which in all these talks is if you broadcast them, you don't get that rain, that timely rain, you just replace it a lot of seed.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of people addressing that, but that is a huge challenge. You need to get that in the soil so it can be protected and be there. I think that's more important than, you know, I hate to say this for science, but an even distribution, if you plant in small plots, you can do that. If you're doing big, as she said, you mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're jeopardizing a bunch of those seeds because they're what they're planted,
right.
Those are the things you're trying to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can address that drilling, too, for broadcasting. We did a, in the study that I did, we had a very large study with a lot of different treatments in, and we drilled or broadcast in season cover crops in corn. I didn't talk about that. In 2010 in Andover and 11 and then in Trail City, and we only had germination. We planted in the corn about V5, V6. We only had germination in Andover 2010 and we had rainfall.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, in our area, if you want to do an in season cover crop, it's going to have to be good.
And there's another thing. This is a wide open area that, you know, we haven't considered.
Mm-hmm. And your herbicide that you put on,
yeah,
in the spring for your corn or whatever cover crop you're planting to, you can't have your carryover effect like atrazine or something like that, mm-hmm, where you're not getting any germination.
That is something I've heard some discussion about, that, you know, you get some carryover from some of these herbicides and it can knock your cover crop out, yeah, next year.
And it doesn't take long on a farmer's field for that to be the end of the game there.
Right.
So those are the challenges you really have to address.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So there's another way of calculating the seeding rate. In Indiana, our NRCS state agronomist came up with a seeding calculator that's based not so much on just dividing. If I've got five species, I'm going to divide the normal rates by five. But based on what do you want the canopy to be? Okay, I've got 20% of the canopy, or I want 40% of the canopy to be this particular,
uh-huh,
species, and then calculating the rate based on that.
Yeah.
And that is going to come from experience,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to anything else, right? But I don't know, do I want 40% of the canopy to be this or that?
Yeah. Well, and there is a lot of, you know, related to cover crops, is really what are you trying to get out of that cover crop, you know, and then that would obviously tailor how you're going to choose your mixture.
The Calpe presentation earlier about didn't produce the nodules because it was covered by all the biomass.
Right.
That's a lot of information we need to know.
Yeah.
The lagoons are incredibly priceless. Somebody asked one of my mixes when I was looking at wildlife,
Yeah, I was definitely thinking that during that guy's presentation that know if those seed company guys want to hear from him.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to follow up on this equipment thing. Drills are rapidly being replaced by air seeders. Maybe they've already been replaced in most of our acres. Any experience with air seeders?
No, not really. I've experienced air seeders. A lot of our farmers have been outside looking at Gettysburg and out into there. The common equipment is the John Deere, the 1885. Seeding it when the corn is growing, not easy to do because, if you're going to seed in season, it's not easy to do because the corn gets too tall and you're not getting it down.
I'm just curious what the mixture of this is going to do in the air seeder. You mentioned stirring up in the drill. That's one thing.
I know.
That's a problem in itself, but now you've got a huge air seeder.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens when you're blowing this seed to a fire?
Our growers don't see that they need to mix up their seed. We've got one grower that did a lot of seed seeds and had a bag of corn seed left over, and he's moving the corn seed. He mixed it prior to the brick into the drill, kind of like you would do the old paint rations, And you could see it straight across that whole field, or low corn plants here and there. And he had no problem.
I'm not talking about drills dropping the seed, I'm talking about something that's blowing the seed.
So that's the difference. Yeah.
I think you went on the John Deere 1890 or so that we use two different lengths of discs. So that way you can put a smaller seed in one ring and a larger seed in the other, and you customize the seed in that way. Yeah, you're going to get some different rows on that, but you can work with it.
Well, that's what, Great Plains has those drills. It's got the small seed attachments on the back and stuff like that. But even then, if you put, you try to put your smaller seed back there, they're all not the same size, so you're still going to have the same problem. You're going to have to mix them up in two bins then, seems to me like. But
so a raised hog, so the suppressant with a squeezing planter, and I like using that, I've used deep plates for small seeds and soybean plates. It works pretty good. I like it because depth control.
You
can't raise cover crops very deep, so they'll come up. And drill, I'm either on top of the ground or that deep. But with a modern planter, I can.
Anybody have any, what about aerial seeding? I thought I heard some people talking about that. Has anybody got experience with some of the aerial seeding?
A lot of our farmers do it.
They make it work.
It's obviously less reliable because it's more dependent, and South Dakota may not be as good of a place as it is in Ohio, because at least more typically we're going to have enough rain at some point in the fall, it's not as reliable as getting in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, that can be deployed. In Missouri, we're seeing the crop dusters where we've never seen before. When I was up in Iowa talking, the crop duster dusting industry is now putting packages together so farmers can call and say, look, I'm in this section, I'd like to have this. And it's a phone call away. They really don't have a hand moment. So that industry is changing.
Any other quick comments from anybody?
Kid, what I've heard about the crop dusters, make sure that you have some experience too.
Well, they're going to weed out if they don't.
It doesn't go very far.
Well, I was at a meeting last week, and there was a guy, he was in Southwest Illinois, I believe, and he had a whole fleet of crop dusters, and he did a lot of, you know, custom application for that. I'm just curious.
Yeah,